following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
Welcome to The Leftovers, brought to you by the Underdog Sports Network, with Josh Dunn, Anshu Khanna, and Dan Bauer. Hello and welcome to The Leftovers. It is Wednesday, May 16th. I'm Josh Dunn. I'm joined by Anshu Khanna and Dan Bauer. Dan, how is Cleveland treating you after that horrible performance by our Cavaliers?
It's treating me very well today until about 10 minutes into that third quarter, and it felt like I blinked, and now I'm here talking to you two lovely.
Love it. Anshu, we've got Anshu back as well. Anshu, I know Sunday we weren't able to make the show happen. Spent a little of our day in Wrigley Field with a lot of the locals, and got to see a Sox win finally against the Cubs.
Yeah, made some friends north and south. It was a real sweet bonding experience. I really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, a little too much fun was had.
Agreed. Well, let's get right into the NBA action that's happening. This might be the worst Eastern and Western Conference Finals I've ever seen to a start. The Warriors, Rockets game. A lot of high energy there from the Rockets. The fans were into it big time. James Harden had one of his better performances of these playoffs, but they couldn't get over the hump. They couldn't stop that third quarter Warriors run. I know that you've been high on this Warriors team all year and for good reason, but what do you think the Rockets can make of this series?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to see a lot of solutions for the Rockets. When you look at what happened, like you said, Harden, one of his best games. I mean, you get a big point explosion out of Chris Paul. I thought, you know, Clint Capela's got to do a better job on the glass. But other than that, I mean, they just had no answers for Kevin Durant. Even in a game where Steph Curry clearly had not his best game, I thought Klay Thompson missed a bunch of open shots. I mean, generally speaking, they got basically the B-grade version of the Warriors and couldn't stay within 13 points of them. So I don't think that bodes super well for the Rockets, considering that game was at home. And you think about the rest of the series, I mean, I think they'd be lucky to take this to six games.
Yeah, I've got to say, I thought the Rockets would at least get that first one because I think the Warriors, I thought that they would take some time to figure that Rockets team out. Obviously, the Rockets went 2 out of 3 during the regular season. Neither team was healthy in any of the games they played against each other. But it doesn't look like the Rockets are going to have enough to get it done. I know it's only one game. I know people like to overreact in playoff series, but I've got to say, I think the Warriors could potentially sweep this series or win it in five. Like I said, the Western Conference Finals started out rough. You know, the Warriors pulled away at the end. We've had two pretty piss-poor games out of the Cavs here to start the series in Boston. Dan, do you think the Rockets can win anything more than maybe one or two games here, if that?
No, I mean, I think they might get one. The old adage, a series doesn't really start until a team wins one on the road, and we have game one. Series is on, and
yeah,
it's a Rockets team that I was very high on, and I had said on a previous Leftover show that if you can get 20 points out of Chris Paul consistently, you have a shot to beat the Warriors, and he did that, and they weren't even close. So hand up, got that one wrong. Sorry, everybody. And, I don't think, you know, I think this one maybe goes five.
Yeah, well, you've been on a hot streak lately, so I think it's okay to miss one here and there as far as predictions go. You know, the Cavs series is the one that's kind of got me very down in the dumps tonight because I thought LeBron would come back and lead this team to victory. Unfortunately, the team didn't come along with LeBron. Dan, obviously, you know, you're a Cleveland fan. I know basketball is not your number one, but it's got to be a little disheartening when you see LeBron put up 42 points and have a triple-double to just have such terrible performances out of his supporting cast. I think JR was 0 for 7. There were technical fouls in this game. JR ended up pushing Al Horford into the crowd at one point in the game toward the end, and you could just see the frustration boiling up. And Tyronn Lue just continues to baffle me at the decisions he makes in games. Like, for example, keeping J.R. Smith in with 6 minutes left when they go on a little run, they get it down to six, and he throws up a ridiculous three as the shot clock expires. And that's just what J.R. was doing the whole game. It just doesn't seem like Tyronn Lue is watching the same game that everyone else is.
I mean, disheartening or disheartening. You got two superstars go for 41 and 42, can't lead their team to a victory over the past couple of days. I mean, like you said, I mean, LeBron has a great 42, but on some level, you know, how great of a 42 really was that with that hot of a start, and he goes kind of quiet down the stretch. Again, this is the problem and the knock against him, right? Is in clutch time he kind of disappears or shrinks instead of rising to it a lot of times, and I think today was a good example of it. He didn't have the help from his supporting cast. He had boatload of turnovers again today. I mean, he's got six turnovers today, and it would have been at least three or more if balls wouldn't have got deflected weird and saved a technical turnover from them. So, I mean, he was trying to distribute. He did all those things that make him great, but he was doing it to a bunch of guys who couldn't hit a shot today. Kevin Love, the exception with 22 points. You know, Korver wasn't horrible, but wasn't great. I mean, get 11 from him. You say horrible coaching decisions from Tyronn Lue. I still, on some level, don't necessarily always blame Ty Lue on that. I mean, it's LeBron.
He's terrible in spite of his decisions.
I mean, this is LeBron's team, and we know that. And I always kind of somewhat assume if there's a questionable coaching, why you leaving a guy like JR in there, it's because LeBron has told Ty Lue that he wants JR in there. So
I don't believe that.
On some level, I still kind of think that.
I don't believe that. I got to disagree with you on the LeBron being clutch thing, though. I mean, I was definitely of that mindset in the past, and I think that the performances that he's had in this playoff have proved the exact opposite of that. It's just so unfortunate to me to see this supporting cast play so badly. And you mentioned Love. He had an okay game, but he missed some big shots in this one too. And it seems like every time that this Cavs team went on a run against Boston, Boston just shows their athletic defensive ability and shuts people down. Anshu, I don't even need you to tell me at this point because I've given up on the Cavs. LeBron's proven me wrong before, but I think they either get swept or lose this series in five. I just hope they can win one on the road for their own pride. But I really think LeBron is gone at this point. I mean, if I were him, I would leave.
I got to say, I don't know if I'm the Dan Whisperer here, but I think if this is what you mean, Dan, the fact that, you know, he performed well clutch, there's no question about that, but I feel like this year more than others we've seen him kind of like his body language where he sort of not gives up on the team, but he just doesn't look as confident in his group, and he looks resistant. Like, he knows he's 33, he knows that, like, at some point he can't do everything. You know, he's trying so hard. I mean, he's playing his ass off point blank. Like, I mean, the triple, I know he has six turnovers, but he's trying to force the action on every freaking possession. I mean, you look at, honestly, I gotta say this, Jeff Green is a disaster for them today. He almost every time he was in, it seemed like they were giving up points. He's a minus 17 when he's on the court today. That is inexcusably bad. I mean, this guy plays 28 minutes, can't get more than a couple points. I mean, I know he's solid, but he's getting taken advantage of every time he's on the court. He is,
not to mention his five turnovers in big moments.
Yeah. I thought Jeff Green and J.R. Smith single-handedly torpedoed this game for them, especially, I mean, you went in on J.R. Smith. I was, like, it's hard to watch that because, you know, this is a guy who's been along LeBron's side all along, and he's made a lot of big shots, but I thought J.R. Smith, like, he just looked so bad. I felt like those two guys just ruined the whole game for them. I actually thought Kevin Love played his ass off, too. I was impressed with him. I thought that Thompson gave some effort, at least on Al Horford, as was expected. He ends up playing 30 minutes. He's a good matchup for Horford. And I think that that's what they'll have to circle back on when they go home. I mean, like Dan said, series doesn't start till a road team wins. And that means, you know, the series hasn't really started yet. I know that, you know, it's easy to say with recency bias that this would happen, but, you know, like you said, Cleveland's within six in the fourth quarter. I still don't think the series is over. I think the best player by far in the series, and arguably the two best players, are on the same team. And I'm not giving up yet. They've got to get less erratic performances from guys that have to play decently well in their rotation.
Yeah, it's a shame, though, because the Celtics actually didn't shoot the ball that well tonight. They only shot at 43% from the field, and, you know, really nobody had a spectacular performance. I would say arguably the player that made the biggest difference in the game, aside from down the stretch when Horford started to turn things on, was Marcus Smart. You mentioned Jeff Green's negative 17. Marcus Smart had a plus 21 in this game, which is a ridiculous plus minus, especially in a game that was relatively close until, you know, the very last few minutes. And it wasn't, you know, anything spectacular offensively. He didn't shoot the ball all that well, but his energy and his defensive play, especially on J.R. Smith. J.R. was 0 of 7. Marcus Smart was hounding him every time he got the ball, and J.R. Smith just didn't know what to do with it. He would either turn it over, throw a ridiculously stupid pass, or turn around and try to shoot a fadeaway J.R. Smith shot, but the difference between that shot in previous games and that shot in this game is Marcus Smart was right in his mouth as he shot it. Very, very down on the Cavs right now. I think LeBron is getting to a point where he's going to start to run out of gas, and you haven't seen it. I mean, that first quarter was ridiculous. He was going off. He was hitting threes.
He basically had a concussion, by the way, in the game.
He did. He gets hit in the face, but after that, he started to shoot those same shots, and he wasn't having as much success doing it. And he didn't go into attack mode as often as I thought he could have at that point. He had a couple drives on, like, you know, Greg Monroe and some of the bigger guys on switches, but he never consistently attacked the basket. He settled for 3-point shots when he shouldn't have been settling, and it just got ugly down the stretch, because not only was he doing it as the team's leader, but then his teammates started settling and they weren't making shots while they were in the first half. So, you know, they finished 10 of 31. They live and die by the three, and they're dying a slow death right now, and it's very painful to watch.
The hit to the face was when the whole game turned around. I mean, they were in complete and utter control. The team, when he went out, was still kind of riding that high, I felt. And then when he came back in and he started missing free throws, it was all over. Like, it just felt like he didn't have that same attacking mentality, like you said, and the precision was off. Like, it was all just off for him and for them. And, you know, it just goes to show. Like, I mean, this guy is the most important player in the league, you know, when he's on the court. And, you know, it's bound to happen. If you take a shot at his head, you know, it's just going to happen that way. It sucks, but you know, they rely so much on him. We'll see what happens, man. We go back to Cleveland, you get like 4 days off. Could be a new series when you go back there. I'm not ready to count them out yet.
I need the 4 days off. I really do not want to watch any basketball for the next 4 days. So hopefully I get an opportunity to watch that while I'm out west. But, you know, honestly, at this point, I'm just so over this Cavs team, and it's going to be nice to have a couple days of not having to watch them. As far as other NBA news, we had the NBA draft lottery tonight. For the most part, it went as everybody expected it to. The Suns end up getting the number one overall pick. The Kings move up to second, and then Atlanta's going to get the third pick in that draft. The Cavs had a 10% chance of getting a top three pick. They end up at 8, exactly where they were slotted. Anything stand out here for you, Anshu?
Well, usually the team with the top odds doesn't actually ever get the number one pick, so kudos to the Suns. I don't know. You know, the lottery's such a weird because of the, you know, the frozen envelope stuff from back in the day and all that. So I kind of all get it with the night awards, like, is the NBA rewarding teams that didn't tank versus ones that did and that sort of thing. But, you know, overall it went basically right. I think the Kings and Hawks both moved up, and of course the Bulls moved down the slot, which is awesome. Great job, Bulls. They're the seventh pick in a 6-player draft. And yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, I could see the Cavs with that 8th pick, you know, moving it out to try to get a decent player, useful player, and try to keep LeBron. But, you know, that's down the line. So we'll see. There's some interesting stuff, but I'm sure we'll get into the actual players here down the line.
Yeah, that Suns situation is going to be interesting, obviously, with the local, you know, obviously DeAndre Ayton, and then they've got the Kokoskov-Doncic connection. So Doncic.
Look at that.
Which is obviously from you telling me about it. but I think it'll be interesting to see kind of how that develops, and we will definitely talk more about it as the draft nears. But wanted to at least touch on the lottery as that took place tonight before the massacre in Boston. Did want to touch on a few baseball pieces of news. Dan, the big one here was Robbie Cano. From Seattle, gets suspended for 80 games for steroids. He tests positive. Obviously, Robinson Cano, 8-time All-Star. He's been around the block, spent a lot of time with the Yankees. Very productive career. It's too bad to see something like this come out about a guy that's really been thought of as one of the good guys in the league.
Yeah, he's out for 80 games, a diuretic in his system. So, you know, that is one of those things that often gets linked to guys trying to flush out their system or mask their use of other, you know, more harmful substances. So gets tagged for that. It's huge for the Mariners. I mean, a team that is very much in contention for a wild card spot. They're right there in that second, third wild card spot right now. And with the loss of Robbie Cano for 80 games, he was already out for probably 30, 40 of those with the broken hand they suffered over the weekend. So essentially kind of a 40-game suspension there with what he would have missed with the broken hand. You know, he's going to be out about 4 to 6 weeks, maybe up to 8. So on some level gets a little bit lucky that the injury and the suspension coincide, just kind of doubles up on those. So again, big implications for that playoff spot. And the other key issue is if he does, or if the Mariners do make the playoffs, he would not be allowed to play in the playoffs because he got that 80-game suspension. So his season is effectively over. He may get to play, you know, that last quarter of the season, but a huge thing for him. He's not the player that he used to be 5-6 years ago, but he's still a major contributor for them. I mean, they're definitely going to miss that bat. So big thing for the M's.
Yeah, Anshu, anything to add there?
No, I mean, Dan pretty much hit it all. Like, he's still a really useful player. And if you look at the AL landscape, I mean, this is a tough loss to absorb. You know, you're looking at probably one of those two AL East teams is almost certainly going to take one wild card. And then you look at the AL West right now, the teams that are competing with the Mariners, and you look at the Angels with Ohtani and obviously the Astros, the defenders. I mean, it's an uphill climb for the Mariners to do this without probably their best bat, you know, in that lineup.
Yeah, I've always liked Robinson Cano. It's unfortunate to see this happen. Like you guys said, I think, like you said, you nailed it. But yeah, tough for the Mariners, who are a team that, you know, are obviously trying to compete now. And, you know, they still have some big names on that on the offensive side of the ball. Some other
and on
news.
The pitching side, am I right?
Yeah, people forget. I love it. So some other news about people who will miss time. A.J. Pollock going to miss 4 to 8 weeks. Obviously, Pollock's been doing well out there in Arizona. This is another tough loss for a team. Obviously, this one was not due to a suspension, but still tough to see your center fielder go down. Anshu, what does the loss of Pollock do for the chances of the Diamondbacks going forward?
Well, luckily they've built kind of a cushion here in the NL West, but you know they've got some good bats too, and some good prospects where they can bring them up, and you know they shouldn't have too much trouble replacing Pollock. But he's a star. I mean, especially after losing JD Martinez, part of the calculus in that decision to not up his ante was, you know, that they had Pollock coming in for a full season. That he's now going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks is pretty big. But you know, luckily the Dodgers have been terrible. They lose again tonight. I think they're 16-25 now. They're a disaster, and they're without their best pitcher and probably their best hitter. You know, it doesn't look great there. The Giants are still waiting around on Madison Bumgarner. I mean, down the line it's going to be tough to hold those teams off, but for now, I mean, if they had to pick a time to lose Pollock, this is definitely the time to do so.
Yes, sir. Anything to add, Dan, before we move on to our Oh, By the Ways and wrap this thing up? Close to that 20-minute mark.
Just that, you know, he was very quietly, Pollock, that is having really close to his 2015 All-Star selection. I mean, he was right on track for those numbers. I mean, about a quarter of the way through the year, the guy had 33 RBIs, 11 home runs, hitting .293, slugging .620. OPS of 969, nice. So, I mean, he's having a really nice year, and, you know, goes down, which, you know, Anshu said,
pretty comfortable lead in the West for the Astros, but that Rockies team is lurking. So, you know, this might be a time for the Rockies. If they're going to make a run, they need to do it right now. Two games back at the moment.
Well said, my friend. Anshu, oh, by the way, for tonight.
Yeah, my oh, by the way, is that ESPN's 30 for 30, which does an amazing job, just announced that it's going to do a 10-episode special on Netflix. I believe it's called The Last Dance. It's going to be about Michael Jordan and those 90s Bulls. So I am extremely excited. 10 hours of like unseen footage of those teams. And, you know, a lot of people ask, like, wonder what, you know, what it would have been like to have Michael Jordan in the Twitter era. I just can't even imagine. Apparently he was like the biggest gambler and womanizer and ever. And so I hope they do, you know, justice to what was an amazing team and an amazing story in chronicling that journey.
Nice. I'll be definitely sure to check that one out. Dan, what do you have for us?
Well, it's not 2 hours of content, but I think 1 hour of very solid content. Anshu and I did the underdog. I filled in for Chris Horwoodell this week, so make sure you guys check that out if you haven't subscribed to that podcast yet. It's the main underdog podcast for the website, so make sure you do that. Me and Anshu talk a very extended amount of baseball, especially if you want to hear a little bit more of our takes on that subject.
Nice. I love it. We'll check that out for sure. Also, mine real quick, the Carolina Panthers were finally sold for $2.2 billion. So minority owner of my favorite team in the world, this Pittsburgh Steelers, David Tepper ends up being the one who leads the group of people who buy the Carolina Panthers. So obviously there's been a lot of talk about who would end up buying the team, how much would they go for. So pretty impressive. Tepper worth $11 billion, so he spends a pretty good portion of that here to buy Carolina. So for us, that's going to do it. Obviously, we were trying to keep this closer to that 20-minute mark for you guys. Please check out what Dan mentioned with the Underdog Podcast. Check out Tales from the Show with Dan Bauer, and we'll have some more content coming your way. But for Anshu Khanna and Dan Bauer, this has been Josh Dunn and The Leftovers. We will see you on Friday.